Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Creed 3, the latest in the Creed and Rocky franchises, this time directed by Creed himself, Michael B. Jordan. And it's good. I had a great time watching this movie, and I had a great time talking about it with our guest, Stacy Spikes, the CEO of MoviePass. It was really awesome experience getting to chat with Stacy, and we talk about the film, of course, getting into puzzle pieces, but we also take some time to talk about MoviePass after the conversation about Creed 3, so stick around for that. A lot of really interesting insights into the theatrical experience in 2023 and everything going forward and getting that service relaunched. So yeah, we got a great conversation coming up. Before we get to it, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can, of course, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod on both Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And with that said, let's jump into the conversation about Creed 3. All right, we are talking Creed 3, and joining me today is Stacy Spikes. Stacy, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this one. You know, I love the Rocky movies. I love the first Creed. I felt the second Creed was a little bit of a dip down, and I'm so happy, not unlike Rocky or Creed himself, like he's come back and like, boom, we got this third one, and it was just, felt like a lot of fun. I don't know how you felt about the film yet, but we'll talk about that. But I'm very excited to talk about it, and I'm very excited to have you as a guest and to talk a little about MoviePass along the way too, which, speaking of which, since it's your first time on the show, why don't you tell my listeners a little about you and what you do?
Sure. So I'm the co-founder and original CEO and now back returning CEO of MoviePass, which was the nation's first theatrical subscription service. So anybody who doesn't know what that means, you pay a flat fee and you can go to the movies a certain amount of times a month. And we sold the company in 2017. I exited, and then the private equity group that bought it kind of famously drove it off the cliff. I went into bankruptcy. And then it became available, and I bought it back last year, and we are re-releasing MoviePass and kind of doing MoviePass the sequel, you know, but with a slightly different twist on it. So
yeah,
bringing it back.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's one of the number one things, and we'll talk more about MoviePass and theaters and all that later on after we talk about Creed, but you know, just briefly, like one of the big things about the theatrical experience, I think, for a lot of people is the cost. And so it makes so much sense to, you know, bring back MoviePass at this moment and, you know, try to get more butts in seats. So I think it's awesome.
Absolutely.
That you're bringing it back.
Yeah, especially after the pandemic, you know, when we bought it back, we kind of wanted to see what the stakeholders thought. So we talked to customers and they were like, yes, please. We talked to theaters and the studios. And, you know, everyone was like, yeah, you know, this would really be beneficial to have this back in the marketplace. And so we brought it back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Creed. Let's get into it. Let's get into this movie. Are you a big fan of this series?
Yeah, I've seen everything in the series. So all of it, there's nothing that I've missed. So I'm up to date.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, like I was saying, like I'm really happy that this one kind of brought things back up as far as I'm concerned. You know, Michael B. Jordan, you know, coming into it as a director, I was a little iffy on, you know, is he ready to direct? He's obviously a talented actor, but, you know, what's going to happen here? And yeah, I mean, he showed up and really put together an exciting, worthwhile and fun film, I felt. You know, we'll get into puzzle pieces here in a second, but I'm just wondering, like, for you, when you saw this film, did you get to see it with a crowd or anything like that? Was it a good experience?
Yeah. For I saw it Saturday night at AMC Times Square.
Packed, nice.
Full packed house. So I went to the, I think, 6 o'clock show.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. I unfortunately got to see it in Nashville just as hurricane warnings were starting last week, and there's no one there. And then actually the theater lost power as I was exiting the theater. So I luckily got to see the whole movie. So but I was the only idiot at the movie theater at the time. So but I'm sure with a packed crowd, it must have been a blast. But I still had fun. Well, let's start getting into some puzzle pieces, and we'll get into, you know, what works and what doesn't work along the way. But what do you have for your first puzzle piece? Something that you thought Creed 3 reminded you of?
So the thing that I found great about Creed 3 is Jonathan Major. And the thing for me about any movie is your villain has to work. If your villain doesn't work, nothing works. And the storyline was there, but his transition into kind of the bad guy, he always had that twinkle in the back of his eye, like, you know, you got the life that I was supposed to have. And that it's a very simple driver, but his wording, his looks, his mannerisms, and his dieseledness as a first puzzle piece really brought back Christopher Nolan's Bane. And he, you know, just the raw, brutal power and the fight between Bane and Batman, it reminded me of that a lot. That was like the first puzzle piece that it was akin to. And he just, the physicality of these roles, you know, these actors, you see, there's no special effects on these guys' bodies. I mean, they had to put in the work, and you really get the transformation. And Jonathan's hot right now. He's tearing up the screen. He did a great job in Ant-Man. And I think he just has range and is very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like three of my five puzzle pieces all have to do with Jonathan Majors. I mean, he really tears up the screen here, and he really brings it. And yeah, I've been following him for a long time. Last Black Man in San Francisco, he was amazing in, and he's done some really great stuff. And this is definitely another major step up. And this movie, as much as I liked it, without him, I don't know that it would have worked quite as well. No. He's just such a presence and just really brings the whole thing to life. And I think that's a great puzzle piece to kick it off with, because, I mean, I would say almost the same thing for The Dark Knight Rises. It's like, you know, Nolan's Batman movies are very good. You know, everybody loves The Dark Knight, but like, you know, without those villains, they don't work, really. Heath Ledger in the previous one, and then in this, and Scarecrow even in the first one. Like, the villains really kind of bring the movie to life. So I think that's a great one to kick it off with. I, you know, obviously you could go any, you know, Rocky movie. You could bring the Rocky movies into it as a puzzle piece. That's going to hang heavy over this. I thought I'd go with a different boxing movie and go with Scorsese's Raging Bull for my first puzzle piece. Yeah. You know, again, you brought up that twinkle in the eye of Jonathan Majors. Yeah. You know, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of De Niro in what he's doing here. Yeah. Just this character who is just so unpredictable. And, you know, you just see it in the eyes. They're just not giving you anything of what could be coming next. And he could be, Michael B. Jordan Creed's best friend. He could be his absolute worst threat. There's just no telling from scene to scene. And this guy is just you know, a problem, and you get that with De Niro and Raging Bull so much. And, you know, it's one of my favorite Scorsese films and really one of the best, you know, boxing or sports films ever. And, I think that really, almost more so than like the kind of Rocky, setup, you know, it kind of is hearkening back to that of this boxer who is just going to be a problem for everybody. And, you know, I feel like also in maybe a smaller way, Adonis is also kind of a problem to his own self. He's always kind of getting in his own way in his rise to power as a boxer and, you know, to his company that he's built and everything like that. He's kind of his own worst enemy in a way as well. And so, you know, you kind of get a little bit of that in there as well with the Creed character.
Absolutely.
So what do you have next?
Okay, so this was very interesting. Again, kind of on top of the Jonathan's character, it reminded me of Gladiator in the way Joaquin's character was about cheating to win. And how, if you remember, he, you know, took he puts a knife in his, in between his rib cage, Russell Crowe's rib cage, but he was all about cheating to win. And so when Jonathan's character, you know, hits the previous boxer like in the arm and gets some low blows and is all about this kind of prison fighting, he's not beneath, he doesn't care, I have to win at all cost, and I come from a world where cheating is okay and that's normal, and if you don't cheat you're gonna end up being dead. And in a weird way, Joaquin's character in Gladiator knows he can't straight win. And I think Jonathan's character, there's a part of him that believes maybe I can't, but we see in the same thing that Joaquin characters had, there's an internal doubt that I need a competitive edge to make this happen. So everything from having the buddy go and break the guy's arm so that he can get into the fight. From the moment out of the gate, I felt like that was a very similar thing where I'll do whatever it takes. I'll cheat to win. And that's normal for me. And that was the parallel that I saw there as well.
I love that. That is a great puzzle piece. And, you know, it's kind of funny though, like in Gladiator, you hate Joaquin Phoenix's character so much, but for some reason, I didn't find myself hating Jonathan Majors. Like, there's just like, you know, I don't know, just a sadness there that like this guy, you know, lost so much of his life, you know, to this small, you know, crime. And like, I don't know, I guess it just leaves him in this place where it's like you almost forgive him and want him to do well, but at the same time, he's a bad dude and he's you know, really cheating his way up. And that's a great comparison there. I love that. I'm gonna go with a movie that maybe is a little too new to actually be an influence here because it's from last year, but I definitely wanted to make this comparison, and that's Michael Bay's Ambulance, which is a movie I had so much fun with. And it stars Yahya Abdul-Mateen and Jake Gyllenhaal. And Jake Gyllenhaal is this like long estranged brother who Yahya knows is like, again, a problem. He's somebody who he should not get back involved with. But his back is kind of against the wall due to all kinds of external circumstances.
Yeah.
And he lets him in, and sure enough, he ends up in this bank heist gone wrong and all kinds of insane Michael Bay action. And it's just absolutely a blast. But yeah, this is the same thing with Creed here. You know, he knew this guy from when he was younger, and he knows it's probably a bad idea to get involved with him. But at the same time, he kind of doesn't have a choice. And he also feels this like kind of, you know, necessity to kind of be there for him because they grew up together and were such good friends and all that. And plus they had the situations together in the group home and all that. And so, like, you know, he lets it happen. And sure enough, you know, it goes south from there. But Ambulance is such a fun movie, and I wanted to bring it into this.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think the Wood Harris character that's constantly like, dude, don't go down this path. It's going to end up bad for us. you know, this guy's not good. And I know what you're trying to do. You know, Wood's character is that voice of reason. And we all know it's going to go against the grain. And, you know, it'll have to, you know, our hero has to save himself by the third act, but he's going to follow the deer off into the forest, even sure. though they're saying, don't do it. Whatever you do, don't follow the deer into the forest because there's a bad dragon out there and he's going to eat you. And so 100%, I think that's a really good call. Really good call. Awesome.
Well, what do you got for your next one?
All right. So sticking with the boxing theme, and I'm going to stick with Russell Crowe, Cinderella Man. And sure. the thing about Cinderella Man that I think was what I really loved was seeing this the sensitivity of the family dynamic, and that not just the boxer who's in the ring, their whole family is in the ring. And if you remember in there's that beautiful scene where Russell's character goes and he fights the fight, he's got a broken hand, he loses, he wins, but he doesn't get paid, and because the guy's like, it was a horrible fight, I'm not paying you anything. And he gets home and he's got that little sliver of meat and he's got the glass of milk, and his wife
was it Renee Zellweger?
Renee Zellweger.
Yeah.
Puts, you know, the water in the milk, and he wake, you know, Rosie wakes up and she says, Daddy, did you win? Oh, Rosie, yeah, I won. And I had a big steak and you eat, and the guy hasn't eaten in 2 days. And, It was very similar to watch the sensitivity with his daughter and the wife and that dynamic. So I really thought that resonated for me with the way Cinderella Man took that sensitivity about how the whole family is in that ring. Everything's riding on it. Your community's riding on it. The people that you feed, they're all riding on that. And I felt they really brought that in. I didn't think the little girl should be at her daddy's fight, but maybe listen to it on the radio or watch it on YouTube. But
sure.
I still love that they brought that in. That's always been something that Rocky has done. But that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you said that at the end there. That's something that Rocky has always done, because, yeah, that's been like a core tenet of these films, is just, you know, the emotion in the family is all just as important as the fighting. But then the fighting has to also be top notch. And yeah, Cinderella Man, I haven't seen it since the theater, but it was really like affecting. Like, it really worked. And Russell Crowe's awesome. So leave it at that. But I'll go to my next piece. You know, bringing it back to Jonathan Majors, another comparison for that character and just the scariness and the unpredictability of that character. I was thinking of Tupac and Juice. Juice is where, like, Tupac kind of like first showed off that, like, you know, this guy could be a huge actor. And of course, you know, we didn't really get that much more out of him, but him as Bishop, as this character who's just so menacing and so you know, unreadable, like you just don't know what he's capable of at any moment in the film. And as he starts threatening his friends and getting worse and worse in the film, just keeps getting scarier. When you think he's already scary from the get-go, it just goes up from there. So Jonathan Majors really bringing it with this.
That's a good one. You're taking me back with Pac. It's like, that's that's definitely a good one. So sticking with Jonathan, and I don't know if you saw this one. It wasn't a big one out of everything that he's done, but did you get to see Devotion?
I didn't. I wanted to from last year. Yeah.
So my next one would be Devotion. And so just to set it up, so he plays a Korean, one of the first black jet pilots during the Korean War. And when he gets shot down behind enemy lines, and there's a scene where Jonathan's character is, he's looking at himself in the mirror, and he's saying to himself, everything that he knows, the white officers and the enlistment and society in general is saying to him. And it's this really great scene. And so the camera is set up. So we're on the other side of the mirror, and it's just dead on. And, you know, he's, you know, got that, you're not shit. You can't do this. You know, and I'm using polite words that he doesn't use. And, but the way Jonathan is able to transform himself, like Michael B. Jordan, when he's in different movies, I still see Michael B. Jordan. Mm. When Jonathan Majors does a character, he's never the same person. There's not a, I'm playing Tom Cruise in whatever I do, right? It's not. And so in Devotion, if you haven't seen it, please see it. The acting in it is unbelievable. But there's a, imagine if his character that is in Creed 3 was the good guy, and he's more polished, and he's the family man, and he's, you know, he's the other side. And you'd see that instantly when you get to see Devotion. You'll see he's got that range too, that he would be what Michael B. Jordan's character is. He could have been that person instantly, rather than, okay, this guy can only just play bad guys, right? So he has that range, and that was my third pick.
Okay, yeah, I like I said, I haven't seen it, and I really want to. Again, he is just, he's fantastic, and he's been great in everything I've seen him in so far, and I'm sure that that's going to be no different. So I'm looking forward to it for sure. I'm going to go with one that might feel a little out of left field, but this film kicks off with this opening sequence that is set to Dr. Dre's The Watcher from The Chronic 2001. And the way that they do it, though, it, like, slowly but surely, elements like tracks of the song start like being layered in one by one, and it like kind of remixes the song in a way. And it reminded me a lot of how they approach the sound design in Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen biopic. And each song, like, you would just hear the hi-hats, and then all of a sudden the beat would start to come in, and then you'd get the bass line, and each part would build up until boom, it all just kind of comes together and like really just gets you into that song. And the way that it builds up on the sound design of that opening sequence, it just totally reminded me of that. And then as I was like kind of thinking about that as a puzzle piece, I also started to think about, again, this being Michael B. Jordan's like directorial debut, and what he's trying to do with Creed, the character and the storyline, in making it like a big showcase and just being a great fun time at the movies, which that's another thing that kind of, in a way, I felt like connected it to Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, I know a lot of film critics and like a lot of like the film Twitter types, you know, didn't like it because of various flaws in the filmmaking, but like audiences loved it. They ate it up, and you know, they were out there just singing along with the Queen songs and just having a good old time at the movies. And I feel like Michael B. Jordan as a director is trying to give us a good old time at the movies. And so I felt like that was another kind of comparison to make there as well.
That is a good one and a nice expansive bleep. I think I'm going to continue to be a little boring here, but another great one that I really liked, and I think, again, seeing a character's transformation, was Jake Gyllenhaal in Southpaw. And so the ruggedness, the, you know, the relationship, the losing it all, the what a fighter has to go through psychologically, how they get pulled into the ring, and they sometimes get pulled into fighting beyond a window of time. Or just into things that they don't need to get into, or that maybe they should, where there's that. What was really surprising was, like in Southpaw, it's, honey, you don't have to do this. We can be fine without this. Mm-hmm. But his wife, I was surprised to see her say, well, then go in there and you're just going to have to fight him. Like, yeah. You got money, you got life, like, you. And so I was surprised to see his wife kind of go there when so often the wife is usually, I want my husband intact. I don't want a vegetable, right?
Yeah,
And so I thought that was a little interesting that they chose to have her so easily sable, then you're just going to have to go in there and fight him. Because in one part, she's saying, let's teach our daughter not to fight. We don't want her fighting in school. We don't want her behaving poorly. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, then get in there and kick his butt, honey. You know, rarely do you see that. So I thought that was an interesting twist.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like her character has been kind of anti the boxing, you know, like kind of throughout the other movies. So, yeah, for her to just be like, no, you got to just do this was interesting. But yeah, Southpaw of like the recent boxing films of the last 10 years or so, just really, Gyllenhaal just does such a great job in that film. So, great one. And my final puzzle piece. So Michael B. Jordan has not been shy about mentioning the anime inspirations of the fight scenes in this. And I'm not an anime guy, so I can't really speak to any of those specific anime films or series that I'm sure were a big influence. But I am a Street Fighter guy, so I was going to go with Street Fighter V, the video game, as a puzzle piece here. Because, you know, I think that draws its same influences from those same animes that he's probably talking about, where during these key moments in the fight scenes where everything just kind of blurs out, and we get almost a little bit of a magical realism in a way of how the fights are being filmed, and everything just kind of blurring out, and it's just all that focus on the punches and the connection of fists to bodies and all the sweat and all that stuff. And so just the way that those fight scenes, especially the final one, are filmed, you get a lot of that inspiration. You see what he was talking about when he's talking about anime influence being here.
I agree 100%. They kind of have this departure from the world, and I think they do a really good job there. And that's where you got to see his directorial style starting to take off. You get to see him experimenting with a different palette and playing around with things a little bit differently. I can see that. So my last one, I don't know if this is going to make sense, but this is just more. I thought of it's more of a compilation of things, but I thought of the Thriller in Manila documentary with Muhammad Ali, and just the reminder of the world behind the world, right? And the business underneath, and the selling of this, the brutality, and what really made me think about that was when they were trying to, you know, you'll get these fighters on both sides understanding we need to sell the controversy. We need to have the escalation. When they're saying, boys, save it for the weigh-in, right? You know, and how it's like we're watching wrestling and we're kind of in on it. They are going to settle it in the ring, but the working it up to the good guy, the bad guy, the everything from walking out of the locker room, that we're all being hyped up and we're going along for the ride, and then we're going fight, fight, fight. And when you looked at behind the scenes of that documentary, you got to see Muhammad saying, well, I need to come up with a new rhyme because I need to get in his head and I need to have him upset, and I need Howard Cosell to cover me. And you realize, like, wow, there's this whole, they're really thinking through this. So when the guy gets his hand broken, and then they're trying to put a new fight together, and how are they going to do it? And then they call into the radio show and challenges it. So it made me think of those films, those docs that let you really get behind the scenes. And you saw how Muhammad was more than just a fighter. He was a promoter in and of himself, and he knew how to game the system to get the numbers up. I mean, he was the best there ever was, and everything whether it's MMA or any of the fighting now, they all go back to Muhammad's template of that trash talking, and he was able to be the good guy and the bad guy at the same time. And that's what I thought was really good about it. I love that as well.
Yeah, that's a great one to finish it up on. And like, I think that in a way it transcends the film and goes to Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors as well, in the way that they've promoted the film outside of the film itself. Yeah. And like, they're really like playing up their connection and the work that they're doing together. I know they've already said they want to be like a De Niro and Pacino, like working together again in the future and all that stuff. Like, they're really just playing to the crowd. And so I think that works on multiple levels. So I'll read down the list of everything we just talked about, and we'll get into some closing thoughts here. But we talked about The Dark Knight Rises, Raging Bull, Gladiator, Ambulance, Cinderella Man, Juice, Devotion, Bohemian Rhapsody, Southpaw, Street Fighter V, and the Thriller in Manila documentary. We got into a lot of interesting stuff here, I think. And of course, you know, kind of as he does the film, Jonathan Majors kind of dominated the conversation a little. But do you have any closing thoughts, anything we didn't quite get to that you wanted to bring up here about Creed III?
No, I thought it was a really fun film. I loved the music. I thought they were true to the legacy of the Rocky series. I know there's been a lot of back and forth about Sylvester not really being featured as much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get it. But I thought they're keeping the franchise alive, and I think they did a good job.
Yeah, I agree. Like, that was going to be the only other thing I was going to bring up too. Sylvester's, you know, not being in it. And, you know, it's disappointing that he's not there, but at the same time, you know, this is different story to tell. It's just within this world. And I think it more than, you know, makes the case for itself with this story. So I think they did a great job with it. And with that said, let's talk a little about MoviePass here.
Sure.
Like I said, I'm just, you know, excited to have you here. And I think, you know, just to kind of to kick it off, we should, you know, talk briefly about what's changed from, you know, last time to this time. You know, like, obviously the world has changed quite a bit between then and now. But as far as like the actual service is concerned, I know like now there's going to be like the tiered pricing and the credit system. If you want to talk a little bit about that and like how that is kind of changing the approach.
Yeah. So, there's the two aspects of it. So one, previous version was kind of one plan for the whole universe. It was just flat, and that was you paid one fee and it didn't matter where you went, everything was flat and equal. Now it's on a credit system, so you pick a plan that gets you a certain number of credits that will get you a range of movies that are if you think of peak and off-peak time. So if you want to go to more movies, you go off-peak times. If you want to use your credits and go during, you know, Friday night, opening night of a film at 7 o'clock, then you're going to use more credits than if you go other times. So what we did a listening tour with the studios and with the theater owners, and to be honest, that there was a feeling like we weren't going to add value if we were just trying to play the Friday, Saturday night slot, right? The industry doesn't need help there, but it's how do we drive traffic in off-peak times and how do we create value for them there? Because there's a lot of available capacity, and can we help play with pricing for people that offer them value? So that's really, you know, we're focused on that aspect of the business. How do we put butts in seats during off-peak times? How do we add value to the stakeholders? And then how do we kind of help bring a, you know, we see the innovation with filmmaking is extraordinary. I mean, it's when you look at Avatar, you have to sit there and constantly remind yourself, this is not real.
Right, sure.
You have to say, this is not real. and yet, the business models around movie going have largely not changed and evolved in almost 70, 80 years. It's still a pay-per-view model that dominates. And so we feel like there's a lot of software opportunities to kind of upgrade traction in new ways, like subscription models or ad-based models. And that's what we want to bring to the table in this space that we really love so much.
So to that point, when the first version of MoviePass was kind of coming to a close with the company that bought it and, like you said, drove it off a cliff, the bugs that were in the system, like what are the kind of some of the steps that are being taken to make sure that things maybe go a little smoothly this time around?
Yeah. So there's always challenges. That's why you put a big beta sticker on things. Now, one of the big changes that we had, the first one was actually a simpler system. So it was kind of, no matter where you went, it was, in a sense, you were using one credit. You can go to the movie every single day. That's all. It didn't matter. This time you're creating more of a marketplace that has these dynamic moving pieces. And so that's a lot more challenging than anybody can walk up to any theater, just swipe the card and boom, it doesn't matter. Now what you're doing is saying, hey, this loaf of bread right now is $5, but if you wait till tomorrow, it might be $2, right?
Yeah.
And so the dynamics of those moving parts are a little trickier, but so far things are working pretty smooth and we're pretty happy with it. And it's just staying on top of a lot of excitement and accelerated growth. And we're still a small little company and trying to run as fast as you can in front of that with, you know, the capital that you have. So that's kind of normal for startups. The best problem to have is people are banging on your door, trying to use the product and they're excited about it and they're, you know, overwhelming. The system is better than crickets and you wish your doorbell was ringing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we see it. It's not just, you know, theaters, but we see the streaming companies having issues with, you know, keeping customers or keeping customers happy and not having to raise prices constantly. And so it sounds like, you know, you're trying to, you know, do this multi-layered approach to kind of keep things smooth in a long term. So that's great. You know, for you, I want to talk about you a little bit. You know, obviously, we've just talked about a whole bunch of movies that you love in talking about Creed. But do you have a favorite theatrical experience? Like one thing that sticks out in your memory as like, I was a part of this amazing crowd and just had such a great time at the movies.
You know, God, there's so many of them. I'll maybe name a few, but there was not a big crowd. I was a young kid and I saw Blade Runner for the first time. And my dad took me to the movie. You know, I wasn't old enough to drive. My dad took me to the movie and fell asleep in it and started snoring. But that movie changed my life. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I got to work in this, you know, this is the medium for me. And that was a very big pivotal point. But something like in recent times, like the power of seeing a movie in theaters, Avatar is like an obvious one. But what one was really cool was going to see Parasite with the crowd. And that thing was this sleeping hit. And it was a really funny thing. So I live in the West Village. And I went over to IFC and I said, I'd like to buy a ticket to Parasite. And they said, it's sold out. I said, okay, I'll go back home. I'll come around the corner. Let me get a ticket to the next show. The lady goes, no, all the rest of the shows for the evening are all sold out. And I was like, wait, something's happening here. So I opened my app and there was one seat at AMC Times Square. And I got the seat. I ran it. I was even like 10 or 15 minutes late because of credits. And watching that film with a live audience. And what was beautiful was most of it was an Asian audience, right? Mm-hmm. And that was amazing. And because it was multiple films. It was like part of a slapstick comedy. Then it becomes a horror movie. Then it becomes a slasher film. And that's the kind of stuff that you just... I always tell people cinema is the live concert of the movie industry, right? It's and there's nothing like going to that. You can say, oh, I, you know, I bought every Prince album there was, but it's like, but did you ever see him play live? Right.
Right,
it's a different thing. And I think that's the difference in how cinema is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people, you know, like to complain about things with movie theaters, but it's like, it's such an experience to go, regardless of if you have to deal with some guy with his phone on down there, or if you have to deal with, you know, some, you know, sticky seats or whatever, like whatever the issue is, like, it's still an experience. Whereas at home, it's just, you're just kind of watching a movie.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. Exactly. We're recording this, you know, right before the Oscars are this weekend, and I'm not going to ask for your prediction or what you're rooting for or anything like that, but okay. I am curious though, what you think. You know, it seems like our front runners, I would say it's kind of between these three movies, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is this scrappy little weird movie that's connected with this whole new generation, you know. We've got All Quiet on the Western Front, which is incredibly well made but very depressing remake of a war movie, and a streamer. And then I guess maybe they could just give the award to Top Gun Maverick for getting people back to the theaters. Those do seem to be like the front runners, and I'm just curious what you think about those kind of being the big of the moment movies for this particular year's Oscar.
Yeah, so my overall comment, so I'll start with Top Gun. You know, the Oscars are really good about breaking careers and, you know, going and doing things for the little film that could. But there is something about the dedication, the commitment to the craft that Tom Cruise has that, you know, I have such a respect for. And he everything he's thinking about, he's not thinking about it for an experience smaller than, you know, a four or five story building, right? Nothing he's doing is thinking like that. And I think we need more of that, right? And I think that it's a reminder of what we do value, and that television, no matter what size it's on, is still television, and cinema is still a communal experience. And a lot of people don't know this. It's a true fact that movie going is the number one out of home entertainment activity in the world, more than all sporting events combined. And we beat it up because it's popular, because we can now watch movies on our phone. But the reality is it's great. So I would like to see it be honored in some way. But I do think Everything Everywhere is a freight train and is going to wreck shop on on Oscar Sunday. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's where my money's going. But it's been an interesting year for movies, and 2023 is off to a great start. We're seeing like a lot of these like weird kind of B movies overperform things like Cocaine Bear and Megan. This weekend we've got 65, which looks absolutely bananas. But I don't know. I'm just wondering what your thoughts were on just how weird some of these movies have been that have been doing well this year.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the fun of cinema. It, you know, there was a period of time it was like, will there ever be a time that there's not Marvel movies, right? Everything back to back. And I'm thrilled to see. So me and the whole staff, so the team usually goes once or twice a month. The whole company, we all go to a movie together.
Nice.
Usually Thursday night when something's opening. And so we all went to see Cocaine Bear. That was a hilarious company outing. And if you want something to take your whole company to, go see Cocaine Bear.
We just did a live show on it, by the way, at the movie theater, like right after the movie ended. I had all my mics set up and we recorded
It.
It was a great time.
that was hilarious. And then Megan, I'm waiting for Megan, the Broadway musical. That thing was hilarious. The music was great. The over-the-top one-liners. I mean, she is the new Chucky, right? She's the new Chucky doll. And so I just think it's great. It feels like the 80s and the early 90s again, that kind of little weird things are kind of popping in there. And I think that's the refreshing thing about cinema. You just, it'll shift on a dime. Certain categories will take off when you see films like 80 for Brady. And I think everything's really performing strongly. Kind of like what you talked about, seeing Black Panther perform as well as it did and then outperform anything on the Disney Plus platform for streaming. So it's also showing the power of allowing these windows to really let them develop themselves. Don't cannibalize the windows, because you can get multiple bites of the apple. So we're finally seeing that play out.
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of just encompassed some of what my last question was going to be in there. So we'll let that one lie. And instead, I'll close it out, as I always close out with all my guests, and ask, what's a movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
I went to see Bill Nye's Living.
Oh, sure.
That was sweet. You know, that was really good. I don't even know if it's still in theaters right now, but that was one of those little quiet surprises. And it was a remake of the Japanese film. But it really was one of those in the, you know, I think I saw it early Saturday afternoon. And, you know, you found yourself welling up in it. And it really reminds you what's important about life. And when you know your time is up, you treat things very differently. And that was a really sweet film. And I would say definitely check it out.
I'd spend most of my time at the movie theater. So
yeah.
well, this was great. Tell the people where they can find more info about signing up for MoviePass.
Yeah, so you can go to moviepass.com. You can check that out there. And if you're at all curious of the crazy backstory about everything, there, I have a business memoir that just dropped called Black Founder, and that book is in stores, and there's an audio book, and it gets into all the nitty gritty about what happened. And Mark Wahlberg with HBO are actually in the process of making a documentary about the whole thing. So that's coming later this fall. So a lot coming. And so you can either find the book over at stacyspikes.com. You can sign up for MoviePass at moviepass.com. There's a wait list right now, but we will have it open to the whole country by April or May.
Awesome. Yeah, I actually got my card right as I was leaving for Nashville. So I'm looking forward to using it now that I'm back in town and getting back to some more movies. So
that's great.
Well, Stacy, thank you so much for doing this. I hope you had a good time, and maybe we'll be able to get you back again sometime.
Anytime. This was great. A wonderful format. I love it.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years, and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Creed 3. Thanks to Stacy for joining me on that one. And like I said, I'm very excited to use my movie pass and go out to some movies, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah, if you're enjoying Piecing It Together, you know, we'd really appreciate your 5-star ratings and reviews over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Good Pods or wherever it is that you're listening. And of course, make sure you're subscribed while you're at it. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. You know, we recently did the Cocaine Bear live show, and while I don't have anything to announce quite yet, we do have some more live shows in the works, so keep an eye on those social medias to get the info when that happens, because that is going to be happening sometime soon. Aside from that, we do have a Patreon, and I got to plug that. The Produced by David Rosen Patreon has bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there. I'm actually getting ready to post a film score that I worked on last year as like a standalone album that for now I'm not planning on releasing like officially on like, you know, the Spotify and Apple Music and all that kind of stuff, but it will be an exclusive on the Patreon. So that's going to be coming in like the next couple of weeks. So lots of great stuff over there. And whenever I finish up an episode of Piecing It Together, but aren't posting it quite yet, it goes on there early, and also other bonus stuff. And we're going to be recording another Awesome Movie Year bonus episode for there soon. So again, patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Lots of great stuff. Check it out. And let's close this out with a piece of music like I always do. And a couple years ago, I released a single called Destined for Greatness, which was from a collaboration with this photographer, Alexis Quaresma. And I also did music for a couple other projects of his, including one for a boxer. And this track doesn't have a name, but this was the music for that video. And I didn't release this one, but one of these days I might actually go back to it and revise it, turn it into more of like a 3-minute kind of song. But it's pretty sweet. So I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.